What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. The Dyslexia Research Institute is a nonprofit organization with the goal of assisting individuals with dyslexia, attention deficit disorders, Asperger's, and related language and learning disorders to reach their potential. The Dyslexia Research Institute provides a full-day program for students 1st through 12th grade at the Woodland Hall Academy. Woodland Hall Academy opened in 1975. It's a full-time K through 12 school designed to remediate and prevent learning and behavior problems associated with dyslexia and ADD/ADHD. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me this hour at the roundtable, I welcome Janet Doak. She's a parent with two children at Woodland Hall Academy.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Dina Ersling is a mother who is also dyslexic, who has a child at Woodland Hall Academy.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Joey Ersling is a student at Woodland Hall Academy and Dina's daughter. Okay.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you. Vic Adderall, he is a media consultant who found out later that he is dyslexic.
And it's a pleasure to be at 411.
Well, thank you. And Robin Rennick. Robin, it's always great to have you. We've been doing this a long time, and I always look forward to having you and your community. She's program coordinator for the Dyslexia Research Institute, a nonprofit organization which operates Woodland Hall Academy. Robin was the principal of Woodland Hall Academy for, 19 years?
About 19 years.
About 19 mm-hmm. years. She also sits on the board of the Coalition of the McKay Scholarship Schools. Still doing that? Okay. And that is a state scholarship for students to help them pay for some of the tuition costs if they attend private schools. Robin discovered she was dyslexic after she started working there.
That's right. Glad to be back, Liz.
And I'm glad to have you. Is dyslexia the common core for all the students that attend Woodland Hall Academy? We just seem to see it so much.
Right. You know, what we look at it in Woodland Hall is that we've designed a program that meets a bright child who mm-hmm. has a language disorder, and that's what dyslexia is about. It's not always just reading. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's comprehension. Sometimes it's expressive language issues. And so we know, and through over really now 80 years of research and educational, you know, training and trial and error, ways that we can help these children learn and learn better. But it's not something that can be done as a patchwork, you know, let me tutor an hour here, let me tutor mm-hmm. something there. When you're dyslexic, you learn all day long differently. And so that's what we provide.
And it's got to be a consistent program. Mm-hmm. How prevalent is dyslexia?
The National Institute of Health says it's about 15% of the population. And, you know, and there's some ranges from a standpoint that someone who early on, like I was extremely fortunate because it was a long time ago, Vic and I go back to about the same age,
okay.
Is they never called it dyslexia, but I was identified as not reading, you know, by second grade, and whatever program and approach they did and a number of other things really made the difference. And it was a different time in school. It was much mm-hmm. more structured. You know, my parents threw out the TV that reading was what we really worked on. And then you have, I think you asked the prevalence, you know, of the 15%, you have some of the people that are severely, severely dyslexic, mm-hmm. and they absolutely, when they look at a word, can't tell what that word is. Mm-hmm. And then you have that range in between. What I think we see so many times is a child who is bright, reads, stumbles some, except that what they don't understand is if you're stumbling at third grade, by sixth grade, you're falling flat on your face. Mm-hmm. And so the real difficulty to understand do something early.
Yeah, because then they continue to fall behind, and they're not, and it's not being addressed. You're nodding your head. You want to share your experience, Dina?
Well, Zoe had a very hard time in school, and I fought with the schools from kindergarten.
When you say hard time, can you elaborate and give us some examples?
She had no reading comprehension. She could not read. She had problems with mathematics. Mm-hmm. And it was an ongoing battle. And I paid, and we did extra tutoring outside school from kindergarten through fifth grade. And it didn't get her anywhere in an attempt to try to help. But because I helped and did all that, the school would never label her or say she was actually dyslexic or had a learning disability because there wasn't a large enough gap. If I had let her just fall flat and not done anything, there would have been a large enough gap, and then she would have quote-unquote qualified. But she didn't qualify because I was trying to prevent the gap. Mm-hmm. So it finally just came that I gave up with the schools and put her in Woodland Hall without any of the scholarships that you can get once you get classified.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, you're also dyslexic.
Yes.
And how was that discovered? How long have you known? Was it something that you always knew something was going on?
I think I was in third grade when it was discovered. And that was also the very beginning of true education for children with dyslexia. And at that time, you got a letter from the school that you had to file with your federal tax return that dyslexic children had to be taught in the same way as the deaf and the blind so you could get a discount off your taxes.
Oh, okay. All right. Moving right along. We're not there anymore.
No.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness. What's your experience been like at Woodland Hall Academy, Zoe?
My experience at Woodland Hall Academy has helped me through the summer and this past year. It's helped me understand how I read, how I do my math. Everything's a whole lot easier than it was.
Okay. Now, Janet, you have two children.
I do. My oldest son is in eighth grade. He was in a traditional school setting up until this year. He started at Woodland Hall in the summer and is continuing on. Very bright, bright young man. Did very well until he got to middle school and then kind of fell apart as he had to assume more of his own responsibility for organizing himself. Mm-hmm. And as assignments got more complicated, homework responsibilities became greater. It became more of a challenge. He became more and more frustrated and unhappy. Since we've come to Woodland Hall, it has been a complete turnaround. He has gotten assistance with organizing himself. His self-esteem has hit the roof.
He has been
on a honor roll, and it has been remarkable. I'm just thrilled.
That's fantastic.
Yes, it's been wonderful.
Now, Vic.
Yes.
You discovered you were dyslexic at a later age, and you were in a...
About 4 years ago.
Okay. What led to that?
Well, I was watching Henry Winkler, the Fonz, being interviewed on some talk show, and he was talking about the problems he had and his son had, and he said, come to find out, I'm dyslexic. And I went, I had the same problems Henry Winkler had. I had a hard time learning to read. Mm-hmm. I could not stand up in front of a class and read aloud without stuttering and stumbling. My handwriting was awful. And then somebody gave me a book called My Dyslexia by a gentleman named Philip Schultz, who is, in fact, a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book about how he discovered he was dyslexic. And again, I went through the whole book. Every problem he had, I had.
Okay.
And I suffered through 12 years of school, I don't think I made over a C. And after becoming associated with Woodland Hall and observing some of the classes, all I could think of was, I wish I had had a school like this to go to when I was growing up. It would have And I did learn to compensate by the time I got into college. When I graduated from college, I was in the top 20% of my graduating class. So you do learn to compensate. But, boy, the first 12 years of school was agony for me, whereas if I'd been able to go to a place like Woodland Hall, I'd have had a good time.
A different experience. Yeah. And I think there's something that Janet mentioned about her son and his self-esteem. And self-esteem is so very important as far as being feeling good about yourself and knowing that you can accomplish something. You have to feel good enough.
That's something that there's been a big change in with Zoe.
Okay. Yeah. And that we know that that is a very important ingredient for being successful. Robin, what does the dyslexic child look like? I mean, what are the demographics? Can you share those with us a little bit?
I think that, and again, sometimes you see different time periods with the ones that are going to be the non-readers, the more severe, typically around four years old, you'll see the child that they may have some speech issues. They may, you know, different words. A lot of them have speech therapy early on. But they're not recognizing letters and sounds and putting them together like many children will. They're not being able to rhyme well. So those early building blocks of reading, then that child, you can pretty well figure, will have some reading issues. So that's kind of the first signs. I think the other side, and all dyslexics have some attention deficit disorder. If they're real active, that many times, though, covers up the problem. So in second and third grade, it's put down as they're just overactive, they're ADD. And so again, when they start that, they're getting multisyllabic words or they're getting, you know, more steps and they're not being able to do, then the problem's all blamed on attention deficit disorder. So I always, you know, tell parents, if you're hearing ADD, let's make sure that we're looking at some other things, because it could be auditory processing. And it could be that, as opposed to, you know, I'm not paying attention because I'm not focused, is I'm not being able to process what you're saying, so I can't follow through your directions. The comprehension, you know, we have some with the ADD pattern who read beautifully and they don't comprehend. And so you look at those, and the biggest key is when the parent or the teacher says they're so smart, but. And it's that but that, you know, really stands out as you can do it this second, you can't do it this second. You know, that's what really so stands out. I think the difference with the age grouping of Vic and myself is we came up, too, in a time that you had a very structured school system. Your curriculum was, let's teach addition and let's drill and practice. Let's teach subtraction next. And what we're seeing right now is with the curriculum, and it's not just Common Core, it's been going on, but what they call the spiral curriculum, and that is, you know, I'm looking at second graders, and they're being shown a little bit of addition, then subtraction, then let's go back in addition, and then a little subtraction, and they never have a pattern. Well, your dyslexic is totally lost, because if you don't pattern them, they can't learn, and so they're really having problems now with the way the curriculum is set up.
Now, in looking at dyslexia, is it what about the family? I mean, is it a condition that is inherited or is it familial? Can you talk something about that?
Definitely inherited. You know, it could skip a generation, but as Miss Ursuline can testify, you know, in my family, we've got at least three or four generations of dyslexics. Some of them will admit it and some of them will, you know, won't. And so you have that inherited piece. And then the other thing that goes along with dyslexia and the ADD piece is a lot of times the autoimmune issues, which are a lot more allergies, a lot more blood sugar problems, you know, where migraines, stomach issues, and people aren't aware of that, that is a piece of the puzzle as well.
Okay. Where do we go? What do we do? I mean, and I say that thinking you already said that it's better if they're early identified, okay? What is the identification process? How do you identify one?
We do a thorough battery of tests, and I think the two ladies here can tell you a little bit about what did it tell them, you know. But we did about 4.5 hours of where we look at How is the individual processing? So as they're looking at something, when an individual, whether child or adult, because we test adults, whether they look up and then they look down, can they hold it in their mind's eye? Mm-hmm. And if they can't hold it in their mind's eye, you're not going to spell well.
Right.
You know, if they have a sequence, can they remember the sequence? So we look a lot at that. We look at auditory processing. And then how is that translating in their reading, writing, arithmetic? So what you're getting is a picture of how they're learning, and then if there's gaps, because it's the inconsistencies, then why are you then seeing the things happening at school?
Ask you to hold your thoughts, and when we come back, you all can share your experiences. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. What's the 411? If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and today I am talking with Janet Doak, Dina Ersling, Zoe Ersling, Vic Adderall, and Robin Rennick. We are talking about dyslexia, ADHD, and we were just talking about early identification, and I had to kind of ask you to hold your thoughts. But you parents, would you share what you were told and what experiences you had with the early identification, or the identification, I don't know how early it may have been, it could have been earlier, I guess, of your children?
My youngest son is 6.
Okay.
Attended VPK in the county and really struggled with that program. Was identified as and put into the ESE program for exceptional student, repeated VPK, and just was not picking up concepts that he should have been as far as letter identification, putting together sounds. He had difficulty rhyming, etc. There was a program in place as he was moving into kindergarten for him to have support at school, but even with intensive interventions, it seemed like he was falling farther and farther behind. And at the time that I was having my oldest son evaluated by the staff at the Dyslexia Institute, I talked to them about what was going on with my youngest, mm-hmm. and they mentioned that they could also evaluate him at that young age, and we proceeded to have him evaluated as well. Confirmed to me what my concerns were, that he had some very real problems as far as getting the basic concepts to allow him to be able to read. And though I was not getting that feedback from the traditional school setting, nor was there a plan in place to help him to achieve the academic goals that I would have for him, knowing that he was bright and capable. And once we had the evaluations completed, we were able to see his potential, and we made the decision to enroll him at the same time as my oldest son. So he is currently in the first grade at Woodland Hall.
Dina.
Well, Zoe struggled with the traditional school system. After kindergarten, I wanted to retain her because she wasn't reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told, oh, well, don't worry, she'll get it next year. Well, guess what? Next year came and went, and she still didn't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Then a new school opened that had a charter school that was supposed to have a full variety of all the different teaching techniques for each subject, and I tried her there. They did not follow through and did not have that, and so it didn't do any good. I moved her back to the regular public school and still fought in both places trying to get her tested and recognizes having the learning problems, and which they never did. They kept telling me she didn't have problems because there wasn't enough gap between where she was at the moment and where she should have been because of the fact that she had been supported all those years.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally just gave up, and instead of letting her go to middle school and watching her just self-esteem just drop through the floor where it was, you know, when we would – a homework that the teachers were saying was 15, 20 minutes at night would be 4 and 5 hours at our house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was this a miserable battle. So when I moved her here, she went in the summer and came out of summer school at Woodland Hall,
oh,
a whole different child.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a whole different child. I went from a miserable, unhappy child with a very low self-esteem to a very happy, easygoing, ready to do anything child that I see now.
Okay. Zoe, share with us the differences or how you feel different, how things have changed.
At my old schools, I didn't understand anything.
I wish people could see your face.
Nothing.
It's like, nothing.
And the teachers, they tried, and then they went to help other kids, and I was still falling, not understanding, screaming, crying at home during those homework. It was terrible. And then when I went to summer school, me and my friends, we laughed about it. Because, I mean, we all have that problem, and we all understand how it feels, so we laugh about it. And it's a great feeling knowing that you can feel that you can do anything you want, that you can become a doctor, that you can become anything.
Anything you want to become. Well, Vic testifies to that.
Exactly.
Yeah, and you didn't have any interventions, really.
No, and, you know, I was just thinking that my parents inadvertently imprinted me that I was dumb. They didn't mean to, but the only A's I ever got on a report card was in deportment or conduct.
Hmm.
And I guess I'd misbehave one time. I was probably 10 or 11 years old, and I got a D in conduct. And I remember my mother looking at me saying, "You may not be very smart, but at least you can behave." Well, that stuck with me up until I learned to compensate. But on the positive side, I did want to bring this up. And I think Robin Rennick can address this more clearly than I can. But most dyslexics are very smart. We can start with the best-known dyslexic in the world, Albert Einstein. And Robin, why don't you give some thoughts on the positives? I mean, because I feel great. I love what I do, and I think I'm a pretty smart guy, and I know Zoe's smart. Everybody else in here is smart.
But, you know, I think that's the great thing, and the bad thing is that the dyslexia doesn't have to be a disability.
Yeah.
It's a difference in perception. And if you understand, here's the way that these individuals need to be taught the reading and the writing, the math, then again, they can excel. And at the same time, you know, Zoe is extremely artistic. She's extremely, you know, she may tell you about her horseback riding. You know, she's shooting trap. She explained the difference between trap and skeet. But before, because all the focus was on what you couldn't do, you know, and failing, and all the time was having to be spent on, again, what you couldn't do and wasn't making a difference, then a lot of these gifts were being missed. And so that's the piece of the dyslexia. And when you look at the number of writers, which, you know, everybody goes, you know, it's a language thing, but you think of some of the television writers, Stephen Connell, actually the one that did the Whistle Stop Cafe is dyslexic. Fanny Bryce is dyslexic. And Is that difference of perception, is that difference of language, what brings their talent to fore? Because they're looking at the world differently. And so what we've got to provide, you know, from a standpoint of parents and educators is, one, a place that helps them learn the read, write, and arithmetic the way they need to learn it, and then gives them that opportunity to also learn and excel in these other pieces. You know, is every dyslexic a genius? No. But they're of at least average intelligence, then we've got to be able to provide the element where they can use that intelligence. And unfortunately, if they don't get the tools, you know, we see so many of them end up in negative settings because they're not able to have the tools to succeed.
Or identify with behavior problems. And what could be more frustrating if you don't understand what's going on, your perception is totally skewed from everyone else. So you start acting out. And that was my next question I was going to pose to you. How many kids do we see, and I know you really can't answer this, but who may be referred for behavioral problems, who it's really not about the behavior, okay? It's about some other learning problem that may have, some other learning condition. But when you're frustrated and, you know, nobody's intervening there, and then you can't quite explain to them what's going on, then you become a behavior problem. I see you nodding your head. Did you experience that?
Yes, Janet? Yes, with both children. With my eldest, it was more of he's lazy. He just doesn't want to do it. He can if he just applied himself. You know. And with my youngest, who, when he was, you know, in VPK in kindergarten, with aggressive behavior that I guess that was just expressing his frustration and his inability to understand what was going on, with some ending up in the principal's office on a couple occasions, and very traumatic for everybody. And again, that's another piece that Woodland Hall supports them in their behaviors. They model appropriate behavior and there's structure in place to make sure that they comport themselves in the manner that they're supposed to so that they can learn. And it's been wonderful.
I think one of the issues, too, that's not academic is if you have visual perceptual problems, then many times you don't see the facial clues, the nonverbal clues.
Exactly.
And so they get into trouble because they really haven't realized, you know, we always laugh about it. In fact, I teach the kids, it's the teacher eyeball. You know, when you see this eyeball and I show
it to
them.
The evil eye.
That means look at yourself and stop what you're doing because they don't perceive that. And so a teacher gives them the eyeball. The teacher crosses their arms. The teacher goes, They've given three clues. The kid doesn't have any of them. And then the kid feels like, because the teacher says, go out of my class, go to the office. And he's going, why?
What'd I do?
And you know, that's a real issue because we can look at who's in juvenile detention, and every study shows in juvenile detention that 50 to 60% of those kids, we won't call them dyslexic, but let's talk about they can't read, they have learning problems, and so, you know, this is where they end up, many of them, and part of it is that nonverbal language. I have watched students with policemen and, you know, and either look like they were being obnoxious and rejective when they just honestly weren't tying into it.
The cues that were
there. And to another student who the policeman, we had brought in a policeman, this is years and years ago, just to kind of shake up these two little teenagers that thought a lot of themselves. One had brought an aspirin to school and told the other one it was this drug, and, you know, so we were going to stop that. Okay. But one of them was 14, when the policeman said, what is your name? Absolutely couldn't tell his name. But, you know, if you were out in the street
and
you didn't know something.
Right, and they would think you were being resistive.
And so, you know, but he honestly could not get his name out and he could not get his street. He never could tell him his address and he knew it. And so their life, and again, in a lot of studies, is an individual who's got the dyslexia or the language and learning differences is twice as likely to get arrested for the same exact incident as a kid who doesn't. And it's that nonverbal, you know, those areas. And so there's need to teach there and need to stop and step back and go, why is this happening? And, oh, let's practice, you know, some of this. We do a lot of practicing of appropriate behavior in school and a lot of, you know, let's look, you know, between the little and even the older ones. You know, let's look and see what's your behavior. How is it making other people respond? And do you really want that? You know, and here's a way to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And what too many times people are saying is stop, but they don't say stop, do it this way. You know, that's what we try and say.
Well, why, what is it that makes Woodland Hall Academy special? Why select Woodland Hall?
It addresses the issues.
Okay.
It focuses not on what they can't do, and let's just drill into them. It works on let's start where you can do it and work forward. And let's not focus on the fact that you failed this grade and failed this subject and failed. Mm-hmm. Here, you can do this. So you can do this, then let's go one step further. And then we'll go two. And by keeping him in a straight path, then you can build one thing on top of another. Not the way teaching is now, it jumps around. And as an ex-teacher who retired from the field, I taught hearing impaired children. And I got the same type of thing as a teacher was, you can't do it that way. You have to follow this, and this, mm-hmm. except for the fact that these are deaf children, and they don't understand that, and it's not going to work that way. It's the same thing with dyslexic children. Okay? Mm-hmm. You have to follow an organizational path. It has to make sense. Starting here and then jumping to this subject and coming back to this subject. Now I have completely forgot everything we were doing with this subject, so I don't have a clue what you're talking about now. I know that both seeing her and from myself, you know, and growing up with it, I've learned that to keep things in my head, I have to keep on one path and not jump around because I can't remember what I've done on one thing. When I get to the other thing and come back to it, I'm like, okay, well, let's start this project all over again because I don't know what I did.
In teacher preparation, do the future teachers get this kind of information?
No.
Okay. And I think, unfortunately, and again, what is now the style of curriculum, if you will, is... And they've kind of this is every teacher should be able to teach every kid in a classroom, and that's not possible. Mm. But that's the idea, or that you have the groups, and so if you're having a child with a problem, let's put in the group over here, and we'll give them some extra work. And you know, and teachers are telling me all the time, you know, so I either let the kids that are having no problems go and kind of do their thing and teach themselves, or this kid over here. So we're asking our teachers to do something that's truly not a good model of teaching. And we're asking, especially, you know, I'll just go back to the dyslexic, we're asking that this group that has to have sequential, systematic, deductive teaching, and now with all the emphasis on, oh, let's have inductive teaching in first grade, let's have, you know, abstract thinking, well, that's going to leave them behind, and when do they get to catch up or when do they get to learn?
Good point. So, hold your thought. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you.
Thank you.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are having a very informative discussion about dyslexia and learning disabilities and ADHD. We're going to talk about that, but I want to get back to, and it seems like we're running out of time always, our last section. Mm-hmm. But I want to get back to Woodland Hall because there's some very distinctive things about it that I mm-hmm. think we need to share with our listening audience. One is that medication. Mm-hmm. And Robin, will you talk about your position on medication?
You know, what Woodland Hall is a is very different in terms that, as I said, our kids have ADD. Mm-hmm. They're active. They have mm-hmm. focus issues. But what we've found is, one, we've changed the environment where they stand, they sit, they talk. There's a lot of activity that refocuses them constantly. And so early on, we said, we're going to do this without medication if all that medication is being given for is to maintain attention. You know, we're not against medication if somebody's depressed mm-hmm. and they have to have that. But if you're telling me, and it's most of the time coming from the teacher in the school, put him on medication, he's not paying attention, then we turn around and say, look what happens. Mm-hmm. The second piece is, let's look at the autoimmune, the nutrition, the issues that they have that, you know, we've seen some kids when the parents truly have tied into the nutrition piece night and day, you know, okay. and we can tell you with a couple of our kids which ones have gone off diet pretty quickly. And it's not just attention or hyperactivity, it's that fog of being able to think. So medication-free is, you know, from a standpoint of saying if it's simply for ADD, then mm-hmm. we insist on medication-free, and let's work on how to let that child learn his way. I think the other piece is, as I said, going back to over 80 years of educators working with this field, and there's a website called IMSLEC, IMSLEC.org, which briefly talks about what has been seen as working with the dyslexic. And so when Dr. Hardman, our founder, developed the program, it wasn't just because of her ideas, mm-hmm. but the background of a lot of different people's research to develop a program that said you're not just dyslexic one period a day, so let's you know, come forward and teach you the same way. The other issue is that now a child's penalized that if we know a child can't read or if a child is having problems, then it's still that they're going to go into a reading, a science class or history class in the public school or private school and be handed this book. Where with our approach is, yes, you're going to have a book, but if you're not reading, we're going to present it by hands-on, by teaching, by pictures, by seeing it, and as you learn. And what's real exciting this year is I have a little group of kids that have been there. This is the third year. And I had to tell one of them that the beginning of the year, I sat down and he read some to me. And I said, now look, there's three kind of readers. Can't read, it's a little bit difficult, and I can read. And I said, you've been in the I can't read pew for mm-hmm. about 2 years. You are now in the it's a little difficult, but I am. And he's like, you know, that's kind of true. But for 2 years, he hasn't been bashed. He's, you know, he's learned information. He's moved forward, and he hasn't been penalized.
It's that positive experience.
It's the positive, mm-hmm. and where unfortunately, you know, again, it's not bad teachers. They're, you know, but it's the way the structure is. If you can't learn it this way, there's not enough accommodations in the world in the public school that will allow you not to get an F. You know, in got my heart just broken the other day by a kindergartner who, in the public school, they know he has a language disability, and they're now doing grades. He got an F because he's being compared to other kids, as opposed to the fact that his teacher says he's doing everything in his IEP that we tell him he's supposed to do. And so that's the difference, I think, at Woodland Hall, is allowing the child to learn information the way they can while we're getting them up to the part to be able to have the reading, have the different skills that, you know, we do.
Vic, what kind of accommodations did you make for yourself?
I learned, you know, I didn't know it was dyslexia, but I knew I had, and I never thought I had a disability. I just figured out that I had to learn, and I could learn anything. I just had to go about it in a different way. And, for example, if I need to learn something, I have to do it by rote. I have to write it down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm-hmm. And once I do that, then I've got it. And, for example, and another compensation is words that throw me are like trial and trail.
Or
12 and 21, I get those backwards. Hybrid, I read as high bird.
Okay.
So I have to pause a nanosecond if I'm reading that, and my mind corrects it. And I can go forward, but I do – there's certain things. I just have to stop. It doesn't take very long.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, if I can structure it, then I can learn it. And it's easy.
Okay. We often see a connection between the Asperger's syndrome and dyslexia. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
You know, I think in – When they talk about autism spectrum, I think that's a really good term, because if we talk about it in if we talk about dyslexia as an autoimmune issues, as biochemically related, language related, then what I've seen, and I've been in this area for 35 years, is how have we so changed our diet, our nutrition, the chemicals we're involved with, the push against the biochemistry, the autoimmune system of people. And, you know, are we seeing more Asperger's people and autism spectrum people than before? I think so.
Okay.
But I think that what you're looking at then is such a change in an onslaught of the immune system and of the biochemistry. Now, dyslexia and Asperger's, they're both language involved. And so your good old we call them the good old fashioned developmental dyslexic, who's really the inherited, can't read good, does math good, typically is laid back, doesn't have as many social issues. But when we started throwing in that kink of the ADHD, then you started pushing in more perceptual problems, some more language, and then I think it's a little bit more of a push. Then you get the Asperger's of a lot more involved, and, you know, in the nonverbal issues and the language issues there. And so so they may not – and we've had some Asperger's where we've tested them and said, you know, yes, they have Asperger's, but this is not the place, because truly they didn't have the learning issue, you know. And so what we're working with is the ones that, again, fit that – the way we're teaching them.
The Dyslexia Research Institute is having their eighth annual Dealing for Dyslexia event, and it's at the Tallahassee Automobile Museum. Share with us about this event, listening audience.
You know, one is to again know that at Woodland Hall we have about 5 to 6 kids in a class.
Okay.
That's not cheap.
Nope.
You know? That's not cheap. And so in, it's cost about $22,000 a year for us to have a child in a seat.
Okay.
None of our parents pay that. And so our board has you know, committed to trying to raise money, to offer scholarships, to do a number of different things. The Dealing for Dyslexia Casino Night is our major fundraiser. We have it at the Automobile Museum. It's February 7th, Friday night. And it is dinner, dancing. We have the Steve Christian party mix as a DJ. We have casino games, blackjack, roulette, craps. Roulette and what's the other one? Roulette,
blackjack.
There was one other thing. Well, okay. Anyway, poker, some of them were playing.
Okay.
With funny money. We have a silent auction. We'll have a free beer and wine. It's 18 and up. You know, attendance. And it's just a fun event. Tickets are $35 a person. And I don't think you can get for $35 a person, you know, a glass or two of wine and dinner and all the entertainment that you can enjoy and then and help kids, and that's what it's about. And so people are more than welcome to call us, get some more information.
Well, where do they call? Give us the numbers and all the contact information.
They can call Woodland Hall Academy, 893-2216. They can also go online and if they www.dricosinonight.com. And that is a full website with what you know the event's about.
Okay. As parents, what have you experienced? And I say this for the listening audience. What's been the most difficult aspect of dealing, coping, you know, trying to intervene and get the appropriate educational strategies for your child?
I think for me, it was always the battle with the school.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I gave up. You know, I fought
as
a teacher.
That's the part that I find disturbing, that you have to give up, okay?
As an ex-teacher, I fought the system as long as I was willing to let Zoe go down.
Mm-hmm.
But when her self-esteem was so low, I couldn't fight anymore and gave up with the public school system and went to Woodland Hall.
Okay.
I think for me, the challenge was feeling very alone and trying to figure out what the best thing I could do for my sons. Lack of information, lack of support, lack of guidance, and I did a lot of research on my own to understand what was happening with them and figure out what I could do to help them, and being absolutely committed to that. Very, very, very stressful years worrying about their future and what was going to happen, and not having a plan. And then relief once we did have a plan and a place for them where they were happy and I knew that they were going to be able to be successful has made a huge difference for me personally as well as my children personally and our family.
Mm-hmm. Zoe, I know there are thousands of kids out there just like you who may not have the advantage of having a mom who really is going to do whatever is necessary to make sure you get what you need. What kinds of things would you say to other kids who are experiencing similar difficulties and encounters that you had? Any words of, you know, advice or wisdom that you would offer to them?
Well, the first piece of advice I would give anyone with my kind of learning disorder would be go back to the years where you started reading the little kid books for kindergartners. That's how I helped my cousin actually learn how to read, is by going back to the kindergarten books and working yourself up to there. Like if you have a library card, go get some skinny books, and you can go to sites that help you. Like if for math, you can go to Math Playground. It's helped me and my friends in my math class do a lot. It has money to help you learn with the money. It has really clear directions that help you understand how to do it. And that's helped me a lot.
Okay. So. Is it ever too late?
No, it's, you know, see Vic here. no, you know, we, in fact, one of the things is that we often test adults in their 50s. The oldest I think I've tested is 69. Sometimes the adults want to know, they just want to know. You know, they've gone for years with not understanding. A lot of times from a career standpoint, my oldest student that I worked with, I think we worked with her, she's about 59. She actually, real short story, had owned a business in town, extremely respected person, had built a support team around her, had sold the business. But she says, I'm a total fraud because she says, I can't read and understand. Now, she could read beautifully. She couldn't understand a word she read.
Oh.
And we worked with her and started doing the patterning, started showing her what was happening. And she graduated TCC with a 4.0, you know, and she had gone back and she said, well, there's no way. And she called me every semester. I made a 4.0.
Oh, wow.
But
how rewarding.
Yeah. You know, so it's never too late to understand yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know. And,
mm-hmm.
and I come back sometimes about what got me, because I was a good student after I had received, you know, the work, I became a very good student. But what got me was the biochemical issues. And that's an issue that, again, with the dyslexics, that they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I, you know, sick? Or why are these emotions going crazy? You know, or why am I never feeling good? And so that really, when I was in my mid-20s and started working at Woodland Hall, was one of the primary issues that the director said, you know, number one, you're just like every one of these kids here. And here's what you need to do for your biochemistry, for your nutrition, your body's sake. And so that's an area that sometimes they come to us and they go, oh, you know.
Okay. Real briefly, will you tell us again the dates, times, and places of Casino Island?
Okay. Casino Island Night is Friday, February the 7th. It's at the Automobile Museum. Tickets are $35. Dinner, dancing, casino games, beer and wine bar. And you can get tickets from Woodland Hall at 893-2216.
Okay. Well, my sincere appreciation for you all coming and sharing your experiences and your expertise on 411 Teen. That's it for this edition of 411 Teen. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical engineer, Evan Rossi. Audio copies are available. And if you would like to participate in 411 Teen or have topic suggestions, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. That's 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org.